and make sure that it's loud enough. Why don't we start with you both saying your names and let me see if that's picking it up.
Well, my name is Everett, but everybody calls me Jack.
Looks good.
My name is Jessamyn Laro.
Great. And we're in Waitsfield, and it is January 23rd. Right. So you said you were born at the Fuller House.
Yes. I think that's what they call it.
Right in Waitsfield.
Mm-hmm.
And you were born up near Rupert Blair?
Yeah, in East Orange.
Well, that's... I have two towns covered here. How about some of your earliest recollections growing up here?
One of my first ones is the 27 flood. And we lived in what we called the Wimble House. I don't know what they call it. It's right near, it's across from the paint store almost. It was right next to the Fuller House. And I can remember the flood. And I can remember we lived in the downstairs apartment. And I can remember my mother making me get up on the bed in the bedroom so they'd know where I was while they were picking things up to leave the house, because the water was going by the windowsill on the outside. And I could see rats floating in the window, by the window there. And my father had a Dodge truck because he run the stage. So he backed that up in the water and they loaded what they could in. And then they made me get in. We went in the truck and we went up to my Uncle Charlie and Aunt Minnie's. And that was up where Ruth McGill did live, at the other end of the village. This side of Corey's garage.
Okay.
On the right going up. And I can remember after I went to bed, seeing boats go through the street. They were out, I think it was Elton Farr and some of them were out with boats. Check-in places. So we stayed there, and then the next day when we could see the house, our barn had gone off, and it was down by the covered bridge here in Waitsfield Village. And I had a bandy rooster, and he was up on the roof crowing. So my father went down and called Dickie, and he flew over on my father's shoulder, so we got him. But he went down the river, and the next day we see my bedroom was gone. It was tipped. And then my mother took a look at the house and she said, no way. There was, quite a few inches of mud. The cellar door had come open. So we never went back in there. But I remember them out at night, and I remember the water going right up and down the main street.
Gosh, how old were you then?
That was in 27. I was 9. But I can remember it real plain.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember staying up at my Aunt Minnie's upstairs, because they made me stay upstairs. And because they wanted to be sure where I was, I suppose. And then we stayed there a while, and then we came down to Lizzie Ann Livingston's in the old hotel and stayed there until we could find a place to live. And then we went down to the apartment across from the garage. And then we went over where Palmer Gaylord, Junior Gaylord now lives. And then my father bought the house where the teddy bear store is. All things bright and beautiful. So that's where I really grew up, I think, mostly. And my father worked in the store across the street after that.
Oh, he did?
Uh-huh.
And that's another subject I'm interested in, are the old stores.
Yeah, my father worked there, and one of my girlfriends, Catherine Newcomb, her father worked in Jones's store.
Uh-huh.
And another girlfriend, Madeline, one of my best friends, her father worked in Carl Long's store, so we girls had it made as far as the stores to go and get candy or ice cream. If one father didn't do it, another did. So.
And those were the old general stores?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You went in, told them what you wanted, and they went and got it for you. You didn't go and help yourself.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things I had never thought about, but it was when they went to self-service, you know, and put in the
right
extra shelves, that the old stove went out and the place that people gathered.
They pumped gas at the store, right on, it's almost on the sidewalk, because we could roller skate on that cement sidewalk. That's where we'd roller skate. Then where the little park is now, there was a tennis court. And we used to go over there and play tennis. And I could go right out my kitchen door. And I can remember my mother kept schoolgirls. And that was all blacktop, so you could run across it, you know. And my mother was in a play, the country school they used to have, down to Moortown. So she had gone for the day, and then we were going down to the play at night. And so one of the schoolgirls that my mother had, Ellen Bruno, we come home, and my father come over from the store, so we had our lunch, and we girls were supposed to do up the dishes. Well, my father went in the other part of the house, so I thought it was a good time to get out of there. So I went out the side door and across the tennis court and went to school. Well, my father said he came out, and Ellen was putting her coat on. My father said, "Where do you think you're going?" She said, "I'm going to school." He said, "No, you're not. The dishes are going to be done." She said, "Your daughter's no better than I am, and if she don't do them, I'm not doing them." And he said, "I'm telling you right now, I'll settle with her tonight, but you're doing the dishes, and I'll help you." So they did dishes while she come down to school, and she said, "Are you going to get it when you get home?" Well, of course, I was quite a lot younger than she was, but I worried all afternoon.
This is your sister?
No, just a girl that stayed with us, boarded and went to school. But they were supposed to help with the work, you know, too. So I worried. But when I come home, there was a note on the table. "Come over to the store." Well, I went over, but I had my orders that I was to go home and set the table. And I was to be ready to do the dishes all by myself after we ate supper. And he worked till 6 in those days. And so I had to set the table and get ready, and I had to do all the dishes all by myself that night. So that didn't pay.
Do you remember any of the funny things that happened in the store? I often think the store was the center of humor in a town.
Well, I remember there was a kid here that they sent him over to get, was it striped paint, Jack?
Yeah.
They sent this kid over to get some striped paint. Well, he went back and told them they didn't have striped paint. Then they sent him back something about, what was it about the stovepipe?
Stovepipe branch.
On the stovepipe branch. And that poor kid, they just kept him going after things like that, you know. And I can remember hearing them tell about this kid coming in and asking for striped paint. And I can remember when they used to deliver the gasoline. There was a Frank Hand, his name was, and he always had this black cocker dog with him. And we youngsters always liked to go over and play with that dog while he was filling the tanks of gas, you know. But I don't remember too much that went on in the store because I wasn't allowed over there too much.
I can imagine, yeah.
But I knew a lot of people because living across from the store, people used to come and do their grocery shopping, you know. So I remember a lot about that. And I always lived right on this corner down here. Where I grew up, so that it was a lot of fun.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
I was an only child, but I never was alone. You know, we always had a crowd around.
And you took in
schoolgirls.
Yeah, that must have been fun.
That was fun, yeah. In fact, I don't see too much of them now. Of course, they were older. I was down the grades, and they were in high school. But I suppose they were like older sisters, maybe. I guess they bossed me around a little bit sometimes. But I remember we had this one schoolgirl, and a friend of mine, Charlene Leno, had come and stayed with me. And the girls would go home Friday, usually, after school. Then they'd come back Sunday night. So Charlene and I had been to youth group. And we'd come home, and we were in my bedroom down at where the teddy bear store is. And or the Christmas store, I don't know what they do call it now. But anyway, we were in the bedroom and we knew Ellen had come back and her boyfriend had brought her back. So we snuck out into the little hall. And when he went to kiss her goodnight, we turned the light on. Oh, was she mad. I guess you know she was hopping mad.
Oh,
so I guess we didn't always behave the way we should, maybe. But it was nice.
Mm.
And Fletcher Jocelyn had a sister, Elizabeth, that was a little older than I was. And she used to come down when she was able to. After a while, she wasn't able, but when she was able to. And Mother said she heard us out on the steps one day fighting. So she thought she'd listen to see what the argument was. And we were arguing over whose father had the most money. And we were arguing over who had the biggest feet. And of course I was arguing mine were, but my feet were a lot smaller than hers. And I imagine her father had the most money too. But we argued and my mother let us argue over it.
Well, how did you two meet?
Well, I met her when I came down to Wakefield to high school. I used to drive, well, I rode with other people driving because I wasn't old enough to get a license of my own. We drove 6 miles and I had to walk 1 mile and 9 tenths to get my ride. But I met her when I was in high school down here.
But we never went out together.
But at that time, you drive up what is now Route 100, well, I guess it was then, but drive to Warren, and there was about, well, at least 10, maybe 12 operating farms from here to Warren, and at least 4, maybe 5 covered bridge between here and Warren, back in our, well, that 36 and 38 in there somewhere. And there was, the road was dirt then. When I came home from the service and started working for Boyne Hunter, the blacktop started right by Corey, what's now Corey's garage on the left there, right on that hill somewhere. And the bypass wasn't in Warren then, of course.
Well, that was long after we were married, because we've been married 51 years. Is that terrible?
I think it's terrific.
Long time.
Back in, Wakefield had the first fire truck in the valley here then, and we had to tend all the fires in Warren, and Bayston, and Moortown, besides their own. The town still owns that old truck. It's 1944, and the town still owns it now.
Is that
they just
right?
Use it for parades and things. It used to be cold sometimes going in, up in Warren in the wintertime, the way the roads were then. Had to put chains on the truck to get up some of the hills. I hope nobody has to go through that again.
Well, now, you said you grew up on a farm in East Warren.
Yes.
Right near Rupert Blair, was it, or?
Well, it's, you turn by the four corners there. One goes to Rupert, one goes to Alpine Village, and one goes to Prickly Mountain.
Yes.
It was right on the corner there where you turn and go up to Prickly Mountain from, turn left by the turn that goes up from to Rupert. Turn mm-hmm. left and then turn right to go up to Prickly Mountain. The house is right on the corner there.
There's a trailer in there. The Catherine boy lives there now.
My dad came from Ferrisburg and bought that farm there. I think it was 250 acres in it, and there was 10 head of cattle there. He bought the farm and the land and the farm for $1,200.
When was that?
Oh, geez, I don't know what time he did came. It was long before I was born.
They were married in 1910, and Edla was born in 13. So it was shortly after 1913, I would think.
Some different now. Well, I think it was Alden Bettis that was talking about riding the Traverse sled down, he was brought up by his uncle, right, Chase?
My aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Riding the Traverse sled down to school. And once he took John Spaulding on it. And I guess John Spaulding would never ride on a Traverse after that.
I've ridden down that hill in a cart with him.
In a cart?
In a cart. Yeah, oh boy. See, it was my Aunt Lena brought him up. And so we used to be up there a lot. And my cousin Leona and Roger Bettis from Montpelier would come out with their father and mother. And Alden and Leona and Roger and I would sort of pair off. Well, Leona and Alden, we were going right in the cart down the hill a ways. And we got in an argument over who would go first. But Alden and Elizabeth won out. Alden, not Elizabeth, Alden and Leona went out. So they went down, they had to pull the cart back, of course, for us. So Roger and I went down, and when we got down, we met my Uncle Frank coming with his Essex car, and he had a bear on it. He caught a bear. So we got to ride back. So we rised them because they had to walk back, and we rode back, and they had a bear rug made out of that. And they lived in Montpelier, and there was this little yellow bushy. Oh, he was a cutie. And he used to come up to their house quite a bit. He lived in front of them. And when my Aunt Mildred didn't want him to go in the living room, if she couldn't watch what he was doing, she'd put this bear rug in the archway. Afraid of his life of that bear rug. And he would not go any farther than the dining room when that bear rug was in the archway. But that's how we got our ride back, because Uncle Frank gave us a ride back and we didn't have to pull the cart.
Yeah, well, Alden said that often his uncle would take the traverse back for him if he was going back up the hill in the middle of the day.
Did he tell you about picking wild strawberries?
No.
Oh, the four of us kids used to go out when we'd be up there on Sunday and pick wild strawberries. Oh, it took a lot for a shortcake, you know. And my Aunt Lena would make the best shortcake. And, of course, on the farm they had the whipped cream. Oh, she was a cook. And I don't know how many wild strawberry shortcakes. Mm. Or you don't hear kids picking wild strawberries. Maybe they don't have them anymore.
Oh, they do, yeah.
They do?
Yeah, we have a whole pile. I used to make my kids do that. But it's funny, I was talking with Mr. Wallace about that this morning and about how it used to be such an enjoyable thing to do, and now nobody does it.
We loved it. We'd pick and she'd cook. And we'd eat. But we always had, every Sunday when we were home, Sunday night was a potato salad and a white round cake with thick whipped cream on the top of it. You don't hear of anything like that now.
No.
They live different.
I remember when I got old enough to drive to school, I could drive up to a gas pump and get 5 gallons of gasoline for $1. Well, it didn't cost much to get back and forth to school then.
Yeah. Well, now, when you had your farm, did you make the transition from horses to tractors, or had that already been made?
No, we never had a tractor on the farm. We always had, well, 3 workhorses and a driving horse. We kept 4 horses. In the wintertime, nobody drove cars back on then, only when it was possible to operate them. But there was always enough in the house back then, so you didn't have to go to the store every day. Sometimes, if it was 2 weeks, we got by.
I didn't like that idea.
Well, you were an in-town girl.
We always had our car out year-round. And I remember I went up one weekend, and he and I and the hired man and Betty went to a dance down in Warren Village, and they had to leave their car over at the Four Corners, way over top of Pike Hill. I never was used to that, and we had to walk, and they carried a lantern, and the mud. Oh, the mud was deep. We were going along, and Jack said to his sister Betty, "Don't go so fast with that lantern." Well, she was kind of mad, so she told him to take the lantern. Well, she took a step, and the mud was so deep, her foot came right out of that boot. So she wasn't too happy. But people wouldn't walk like that. And then we lived up on the Lovett farm. That was in the winter of 42, but I didn't stay there long either. That was worse to get to than the other one. Those days, they didn't keep it plowed like today. They think they got to drive home, you know. But we lived up there just one winter, and Elliot Maxwell and Marjorie were staying for the weekend with us. And we went down to the village to a dance. And we come home, and we made the hill up by Rupert Blair's, because it was the second place beyond him where we lived. Well, we got up above him all right. But after a while, we couldn't go any farther. So Jack said to me, "You get under the steering wheel, and you drive the car, and Elliot and I pushed to get it going. But he said, when we get it going, you keep it going. Well, I thought, all right. So they pushed, and I got it going. It was going pretty good, so I just stepped on it. And we got up to the house, and Elliot and Jack weren't on the back. Oh, they weren't happy with us at all when they got up there. They had to walk up. But he said, keep it going. So that's what we did.
So when you were first married, you went up on your farm in East Warren? And then...
We were married New Year's Eve of 1940. And his father went to legislature, so we went up on the farm.
And I suppose in those days, when you went to legislature, you lived in Montpelier all winter.
Yeah. We came home weekends. Sometimes during the winter, my father always had two cars, and he'd leave one car down to Warren Village because they did plow Route 100 then. So we could go with a horse down to Warren and take the car and go where you wanted to go. But we always had one car at home and one car in town.
But she asked you about legislature, and they had an apartment on School Street in Montpelier that winter. And then the place burned.
Ooh.
Merrill Cathan come in the driveway.
You mean the farm burned?
The farm burned. Everything.
Ooh.
Yeah, we didn't get much of anything out. And Merrill Cathan was coming out of his sugar place. It was late that year. It was something like the 6th of June. And he drove in the yard. Jack's cousin was over visiting me. And she said, what's wrong with him? And I said, I don't know. He was blowing the horn. He come in and he said, the house is afire. And I said, it can't be. We said it is. Well, we went in, two rooms were burned completely off. Then they discovered the other end of the barn was afire.
Oh my gosh.
So the whole thing went within, what, an hour, Jack?
Yeah, and there was no fire equipment here then.
So it just went like house afire. We lost everything.
Gosh, how awful.
So.
That was in what, 41?
June of 41.
Oh,
yeah, June of 41. And we couldn't find an apartment, so we lived with my folks for a year until we could find a place to... And he stayed up on the farm that year because you had cattle brought in, didn't you? Renting it out to somebody? You had somebody with cattle there. I can't remember who.
I don't remember.
Then he worked for Merrill Cathan part of the time because he wanted to be up where the cattle were.
I think so, because my father had an auction, sold off all their cattle and horses. Sold everything.
So you were able to get the animals out of the barn?
Yeah, because it was in June.
first part of June.
In the barn anyway.
We had a new puppy, and I remember the first thing he took was, he put the car over on the crossroad, and he went and grabbed the puppy and put the puppy in the car. I can remember that.
Did you try and get stuff out of the house?
Tried to, but you couldn't. Well, there was a washing machine. It was a nice new one his mother got after she got the Delco. And they kept it in the back room. But when I wanted to wash, it was on a Monday, I couldn't get that thing over the step to come into the house part. He'd have to bring it in or the hired man. Well, during the fire, we had been washing, Arlene and I, and we were frying salt pork. And so then when we discovered there was a fire, Arlene and I took that washing machine, picked it right up, and took it off the porch. Boy, we couldn't have done it, you know. But my mother, this Arlene that came over, is his cousin from Bristol. And I wasn't a cook anyway, and I still am not. But I had enough time frying donuts. In those days, you made donuts, you know. So I learned to make donuts. But I couldn't tell about the lard too well, so... Arlene had said, well, you put one of these wooden matches in the lard, and when it's ready, it will light, and then it'll go out. So that's the way I fried donuts. Well, my mother heard that, got the word that the house was afire. She said, I knew it. I knew it. Arlene Rockwood's over there, and they're frying donuts. That lard has exploded. She knew that that's what happened, because Arlene was there, but we weren't frying donuts. But she knew that lard had exploded.
Mm.
But that's the way I fried donuts, was putting a match in the lard. She didn't think it was too good an idea.
Oh, but what an awful experience. Our barn burned, but not a house, and
yeah, you lose everything if it gets started. There was a chime clock, well, like the one we have on our mantle, but I can't remember. Either the clock came out or the key didn't, one or the other. I don't know if they ever had found it or not, but I remember one or the other came out and the other didn't. I don't know where we had the key, but. And I had moved the, well, my daughter's using the bedroom set. Jack's folks had bought a new bedroom, so hadn't had it very long. One of our daughters likes older things, so she's got it. But it had a dresser and a chest and a bureau and a bed in those days. And I had, the bedroom was so small that I had moved the dresser in the other end, and I guess you know that went. But the other pieces came out and she's using it.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So you did save a few things.
Few things, yeah. But not very much. The stove and the kitchen chairs were old. They were Jack's grandmother's, and Jack's father later bought a camp, and the last I knew they sold it with a camp. But some things came out, but not. Our wedding presents were all in the part that burned first.
Ah.
So they all went, everything. They were all gone before we
even knew the fire was gone.
Knew the fire.
What a shock.
Yeah, it wasn't very pleasant, but there's worse things than that.
Well, did you then find work on other farms for a while, or?
Yeah, I worked for Fremont Lovett, that had a farm up in East Warren. He lived in New York. I worked there for a couple of years. And then I had to go into service shortly after that.
44.
I went into service in 44.
And then when you came out, is that when you began to get involved in Mad River, or?
Yeah, shortly after that, I first started working there. I worked just weekends and holidays, because I was working at Boyne Hunter's Mill, and I was plant foreman there for 10 years. Well, I worked up there on weekends, and then after I didn't go back to the mill anymore, I worked at Mad River full time for 3 or 4 years, but I didn't like working there in the summer, so I started looking after Toby's property for him up here.
But he was missing in action in the service.
You were?
Yeah.
Our daughter Audrey was born.
31st of March in 44, I think it was.
No. You went in May 44, it was March of 45. After he went in, he went in May. Audrey was born in October. And in March, well, I got ahead of my story. Bob Bisbee that used to live here, he had a brother David, and his mother had got a telegram that he was killed in action. And then maybe a day after that, this Glennis Weston now, she was Glennis Martin at the time, had gotten a telegram that her husband was missing in action. And Eunice Farr in those days, if somebody was killed or missing, she would get the message, and she'd bring the message to you on a, I don't know others, but on a paper to me. So I said, if Eunice Farr ever comes to my door, I'll drop dead, because she wasn't in the habit of coming to our house, you know. Well, one morning I was getting Audrey up, and I had her in my arms and was coming downstairs, and the door was right at the front of the stairs. And the doorbell rang, and I opened it, and here stood Eunice Farr. But she never said a word. She didn't come in. She didn't say a word. But she handed me this paper, and it said that he was missing in action, and that if anything occurred within so long, you would hear. But I didn't hear anything. But his said missing, and I can't tell when it was, probably 6 weeks after.
What did you think?
You don't think. You don't remember. I just remember that she didn't say anything or come in. And that bothered me, to think that she didn't at least come in. But in just a few minutes, my mother, I lived with my folks at the time down here at the corner. And my mother had heart trouble. And so this Dr. Shaw that we thought so much of lived down below us here. And somebody, maybe she did that, had gotten word to him, because next thing I saw was he was running up the driveway with his little black bag. And he came and stayed all morning with us. And I remember that part of it, and I remember my Aunt Lena coming and Hattie Dana and quite a few. But I don't remember too much about the day. But as time went on, I didn't hear anything and didn't hear anything. And finally, one night, my father had a barber shop, and he came in quite late some nights from that, because they played cribbage a lot. And one night, about midnight, when he got home, the phone rang, and they asked for me. And he said, well, she's asleep, but I will take the message. And no, they couldn't give it to him. So he called, and I went down to the phone. It was Western Union. And they said, we have a telegram from the War Department that your husband's back with his outfit. And she was really nice. Oh, she was nice. And she finally said, and I'm not sure that you're getting this, so I'm going to repeat it over again. So she repeated the whole message over it. And the next day,